Oh, hi there. This is M.P. Fitzgerald, author of A Happy Bureaucracy, and I'm pretending to play the jazz piano. You know, advertisements were invented by the devil to make Ayn Rand happy, and no one wants to make Ayn Rand happy. But audio production is expensive, so to keep commercials off this podcast, I've got all three ebooks in the Happy Bureaucracy series rolled into one for the price of a single book, which honestly is the best way to support this podcast. Just check the description for a link and tell your friends about the crazy shit you have been listening to have less friends. Thanks. And now, for something completely different.
Fear and Loathing in the Wasteland. The Happy Bureaucracy, Book 2. By M.P. Fitzgerald. Narrated by Gary Bennett. Author's note. Strewn between drug use, groin malice, and cursing on a level tantamount to sacrilege are even more gratuitous mentions of bureaucracy. These bureaucratic references may not be for the weak of heart. Also, child endangerment. Did I mention child endangerment? Chapter 18. It was a familiar scene. While those around him celebrated in mirth and relaxed, Arthur was doing paperwork. The only difference now was that his work was actually urgent. Once the colonel was in custody, the rest of the day was spent processing the slavers, counting the slaves as their assets, and figuring out what else they had to take from the city to make up the difference in due back taxes. Arthur welcomed the work then. It took his mind off of the other dour things that he had no control over. After a few further exchanges over the radio, Franklin and his men approached the camp and set up their own. By sunset, the two remnants of the United States government had mixed, and a celebration of sorts started once the IRS was off hours. Fires were built, stories were told. The two groups mingled and freed men and women, and a few children, who didn't need medical attention, danced in their newfound freedom. Night fell. Arthur did his research. Richard had been found guarding their tent, while Dinner used every bit of Ralph's paper stock she could find to draw the darkest, most grotesque pictures she could scratch out with crayon. It made Robbia melt. Arthur had no idea why. Robbia, Arthur, Ralph, Richard, and Dinner sat around a fire of Robbia's making just on the outer edge of the camp. Robbia was paranoid that Boyd would change his mind and set the fire up where she did in case they needed to escape. No one objected. Richard sat quietly, his shame visible on sullen eyes and worry lines. Arthur suspected that this was an often enough occurrence. Ralph, however, smiled and repeated, "Can you believe it? The U.S. Army," every 10 minutes, as he and Robbia shared a handle of whiskey. Dinner slept curled up next to Robbia. And Arthur? Paperwork. Robbia's mood seemed as sour as Arthur's. She passed the whiskey back over to Ralph, who was already red in the face from intoxication. "Can you believe it?" he said once more. "Yes, goddammit," Robbia shouted. "This is nothing to celebrate," she continued. "What are you talking about?" Ralph said through slurred syllables. "The day's been saved. Dinner gets to stay in the bunker. No one here died. You all get to work with each other, and we found the U.S. Army." He moved the bottle abruptly, then spilled some out with a quick movement. "What's the problem?" "The problem, you pencil-necked ranted shit," said Robbia, "is that the army you are so proud to have found was buying up the slaves. You never trade with slavers or those who deal with them. It's one of the only rules of the road that matters." The two of them had drank equal amounts of liquor, but Ralph was far more inebriated than Robbia. She still hadn't slept, had passed out and suffered from heart palpitations, and somehow was still going. Arthur just knew that she made a deal with the devil. It just wasn't possible otherwise. Ralph waved away Robbia's response, and then passed the bottle over to Richard, who drank in silence. "The slaves are freed now," Ralph said. "What does it matter? One of the soldiers was telling me that they bought them because they were draft dodgers. Everyone is probably a draft dodger to them, Ralph, Robbia said, cutting him short. Yeah, and everyone to us is guilty of tax evasion, Ralph countered. They buy up slaves for their draft, and we raid people for a budget no one uses. Just because we are the better of two evils doesn't mean that we aren't evil. Arthur set his paperwork down and settled closer to Robbia. Richard offered the whiskey to him, but Arthur waved it off. Arthur watched the fire lick at the air, doing his best to parse what he was thinking. Before they had settled down to the fire, before the army and the IRS mixed with freed slaves as captured slavers sat in their own cages, Arthur had returned to Boyd's van. It was empty then, as Boyd, who was uncharacteristically pleasant, was off discussing their future with Franklin. It was off hours, and Boyd's assistant and his personal enforcers had gone off to join in their share of the party. Arthur snuck into the van, unhappy to find that he had to assume the uncomfortable posture that the van demanded once more, and he opened Boyd's file cabinets. There was much there. Boyd was beyond meticulous and had brought far more documents than he could ever need for the raid. Arthur grabbed what he came for. No one paid him any mind as he traveled the camp with his clipboard full. His clipboard was always full. Richard handed the bottle to Robbia, who drank from it voraciously. She was still dusty and dirty, and under the poor light of the fire, it became an honest guessing game to tell the difference between cocaine and ash. Unlike Arthur, she was comfortable being dirty, a necessity of surviving the United Wastes. Arthur and Ralph would occasionally adjust their ties or try to brush off something permanent on their shirts. Occasionally, he would pick the seam of his pants upward, peeling it off his legs from the dried blood of a stab wound. Robbia passed the whiskey back to Ralph and cleared her throat from the alcoholic bite. If you think this family reunion of yours is not going to wake from a dirty hangover, then you're either blind or complacent, she said. As a supervisor, you're going to have to deal with processing those former slaves, look them in the eyes, and then tell them that our raiding is just as bad. Arthur debated on whether he should say it then, if he should just come out with his findings. But he waited. He was still not sure if he wanted to hear it aloud. Arthur was likely the only other person on the planet who thought that Boyd's mobile archive was something that didn't need questioning. Tax law was complicated. You couldn't remember it all. He tried. It was a colossal task. Bringing it with you to reference seemed perfectly rational to him. But the mobile archive was not complete, and Arthur, fearing discovery, took a pile, which he felt was a good approximation of what he was looking for. He was looking for old information, something from before the war. Most of it did not pertain to what he was looking for, unfortunately. It wasn't until he had skimmed half of his pile that he found something close to what he was looking for. Ralph took a swig of whiskey. The difference from such a small amount was visibly noticeable on Ralph. His head swayed from side to side, and he held the bottle by the neck at an odd angle. You're a bitch, he slurred at Robbia. Arthur prepared for the worst. He knew that Ralph had never seen her wrath properly, a spectacle that would make Poseidon self-conscious. It usually ended in damaged groins or raging fires. But Robbia laughed it off. A bitch who's right, she said. Ralph passed the whiskey off to his cousin. When Richard waved it away, Ralph handed it back to Robbia. She placed the bottle near Arthur's feet and laid a hand on Dinner's sleeping head. Riddle me this, Ralph, she said as Arthur avoided the group's gaze. What exactly happens when the army decides that you're a draft dodger? They may not even recognize that the war is over. That's a full and miserable life in their service. Ralph shrugged. In the distance, Arthur watched as a man and a woman, both freed from the clutches of the colonel, danced barefoot around a fire. Auditors, enforcers, and some of Franklin's men watched them with high spirits. They were skinny, sunburnt, and their faces weathered. Their clothes looked like they may have actually been crafted recently instead of scavenged like the majority around them. Whoever these two were, they were likely self-reliant, maybe tribals. Most tribals only wanted to get through the days ahead of them, surviving and living without creating harm. Now their self-woven clothing was near tatters, abused from the terrors of slavery. Arthur had only caught a glimpse of their lives in the cages, had only lived a day of it. He could not imagine what abuse and indignity were laid upon them. These two had survived the worst, had not been sold off, and against all odds, were now free. The first thing they had decided to do with that freedom? Dance. They decided to dance. It was beautiful and chaotic and out of sync. It was as free as them, the indomitable human spirit at its most base and brilliant. If there was a slave who was previously bought and conscripted into one of Franklin's soldiers among them in the camp, not a one made it known. It was possible that Franklin had not brought any on purpose. What life would have awaited these two if not for the IRS? What would happen if the army decided to draft them? However dire, these two had dodged it. For now. It took a moment for Arthur to realize that the sight of the two dancing had made him cry. He wiped his tears on his sleeve, grateful that the rest of the camp was as busy watching the two as he was. It was not his masculinity he was protecting or the embarrassment of the tears. If they spotted him, he would have to explain what he had found. Arthur felt Robbie's afro brush up against his ear as she rested her head on his shoulder. The gesture was so affectionate and warm that it caught him off guard, but he relished it. "I'm glad you're alive, G-Man," she said in a soft tone as she grabbed at the middle of his arm. "I've spent the last 2 days fearing that you were dead. And on cocaine. A lot of cocaine." Arthur started to say something, stopped, then started again. "You had no idea you were delivering my assassin?" he finally said. She spent most of the ride asking why to everything I did and drew pictures. "But there were clues. I might have noticed them sober." The freed couple continued to dance. "Or maybe I hadn't done enough drugs," she offered belatedly. If it was a joke, neither of them found it funny. "You worried for no reason," Arthur teased, hoping to offer some jest. "It's not like she could have killed me. She's just a little girl." Robbie raised her head then and looked directly at him. "Arthur, listen to me," she said, as serious as he had ever seen her. "This is important because I care about you for some foolish reason, and it is something that you need to know if you are going to continue to survive." Arthur said nothing but nodded his head. Robbie continued. "A little girl can absolutely kill you. A little girl's not just your match in a fight. You barely match in the same weight class. Do you understand? You are the easiest man in the world to kill, and it is only because of random chance that you haven't died at the hands of a slight breeze." "Thanks," Arthur replied with a bruised ego. Robbie laid her head back down on his shoulders. "Love you," she said then, and cleared her throat. I think I love you." Her other hand reached out for his, and he held it tenderly. For a moment, both of their dread and loathing ceased. Arthur's heart raced. He swallowed hard. "I love you too," he said, and felt Robbie's hand squeeze his for just a moment. "Break my heart, and I'll do unspeakable violence to my groin and probably lobotomize me. No, I remember. You're horrifying." He wanted the moment to last. It was the first and only positive feeling and relief he'd had in the past 2 days. Was probably the only positive feeling for Robbie of the past 2 days as well. But he knew that it wouldn't. He knew that he had been putting this off for too long. The couple ceased their dancing. "I have very bad news," Arthur said, breaking the safety of silence he had coasted on for far too long. Richard's head snapped right to attention, and he blinked in a panic. Ralph, drunk and stupid, had to move his own more slowly. In the distance, the sounds of mirth and celebration continued. Arthur had the attention of his friends. He breathed deeply. I have bad news, and I'm going to need all of your help. What is it? Rao slurred. While Boyd was out, I robbed his van. Don't talk dirty to me in front of the child, Robbia teased with her Cheshire Cat grin. I stole some old files, dated just before the nukes were dropped during the war. I was originally looking for information on whether federal employees can be drafted, as the draft was reinstated before everything got leveled and destroyed. Can we? Ralph said with wide eyes. That's the bad news, isn't it? I don't know yet, Arthur replied honestly. But what I did find was worse. Arthur paused then to collect his thoughts. No one rushed him. Robbia picked up the bottle of whiskey and took a swig. I came across documents for the federal budget. Oh, Jesus, Arthur, you had me scared, Ralph exclaimed. What, you found some sort of clerical error that nobody's corrected for 26 years? Who cares? Arthur wanted to yell at Ralph then. He wanted to shame him for never really caring about the job. If he had paid attention, if he had done his work thoroughly, Arthur wouldn't need to rely on dramatics to make him frightened. He held it back. Yelling at his cubicle mate would do no good. It would not fix the problem, nor would it make him feel any better. Instead, he looked out at the freed slaves, all of them now considered to be assets and a viable way to pay taxes to the IRS. What I found was that the federal budget, which makes up what we collect, mind you, was adjusted for wartime. While everyone else was playing nice with Franklin and his men, I went through the laws and procedures that we are still bound to. Arthur stood, trying his best to contain his dread. No, his anger at the situation. He paced, then grabbed the bottle from Robbie's hands and drank for the first time himself. The angry bite of the drink matched his own. If alcohol was supposed to give you courage, he found none then. He pressed on without it. The U.S. military was allocated 60% of the budget then, Arthur said. That means that we have to give up 60% of all that we have collected to Franklin's army. All of the stored food, weapons, and goods. He gets the majority of that. Arthur took one final swig of whiskey. That means that once we process them, 60% of those freed slaves are his. He let us collect them so that he didn't have to buy them.
About the author. M.P. Fitzgerald is an author and humorist dedicated to injecting the feverish gonzo style into fiction. You can get Memos from the Wasteland, which is the official prequel to this book, free. It contains hilariously bleak office drama, Robbia's diary, and Arthur's last letter from his father. To get your copy, just head over to his website at mpfitzgerald.art. You'll also get free updates on future audiobooks and more. We hope you have enjoyed A Happy Bureaucracy by M.P. Fitzgerald, narrated by Gary Bennett. Text copyright 2019 by M.P. Fitzgerald. Production copyright 2021 by M.P. Fitzgerald.
Music by Dustmice, available on all streaming services and dustmice.bandcamp.com.
Oh, hi there. This is M.P. Fitzgerald, author of A Happy Bureaucracy, and I'm pretending to play the jazz piano. No one is holding a gun to my head to say this, but they are withholding the antidote. Funding for this podcast comes from ebook and paperback sales of A Happy Bureaucracy, the book. Send a warning to you straight-laced and prudish books on your bookcase by adding paperback copies of A Happy Bureaucracy, Fear and Loathing in the Wasteland, and Post-Apocalyptic Pirates. Just head over to my website, mpfitzgerald.art. Once more, that's mpfitzgerald.art. Please spare my family. Please.